Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, 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 Hare Hare.
Narad Muni continues. Do the people that inhabit thy realm, bought by thy foes, ever seek to raise disputes with thee, uniting themselves with one another? So in other words, that if the enemy has made inroads into your, citizens and getting them to be favorable to themselves, the enemy, do then those people then unite together and then cause disputes and difficulties in the kingdom and always give you trouble? Right. So, in other words, that shouldn't happen. You should always be being careful to see what is there, what's going on. If the enemy is working like that, then you have to counter that. You always have to be also giving the same, because it's by publicity that it would expand like that. So in the same way, you do the same thing, but in a positive way that's, proper. Does that make sense? Right? Because the point is if different people have opinions, that's one thing. It's not good, but, it can happen. But if they unite together, then it becomes very powerful. Right? Once they unite, then that means then they'll start doing things in a way that's more organized. So that will give you much more problems. So you always have to see that they're not coming together in that way. Yeah. Are those amongst thy foes that are feeble always repressed by the help of troops that are strong, by the help of both councils and troops? Okay. So then, if the enemy is weak, then are you keeping them controlled by your strength? Right? Because once they're weak, if you manifest your strength, then that will keep the balance proper. Right? Always remember in here, when we're talking about enemy means someone who is not working in a way so that you can protect your people. Right? Does that make sense? You have religious principles. To be able to follow those religious principles, then that's considered good. Those that help in that, that's good. Those that oppose it, then it's not considered good. Does that make sense? In other words, Dharma is the main way to look at all this. You can look at this even though this is niti, but the thing is, it's all based on Dharma, right? Anything that's been said so far hasn't contravened any religious principle that Manu gives. It's basically straight. Manu Samhita would say exactly the same thing. But the perspective is that from religion, to protect the people. You could also look at it from profit, and then all these things would just be straight politics, right? So this is religion, because you're dealing with what is the nature of something, what's the nature of the political environment. The other one is you're dealing with the nature of the political environment for profit. You understand the difference? One is you're dealing with the nature of the political field because that's part of your religious duty. Right. The other is you're dealing with it because you want to get the profit out of it. Does that make sense? Just like one would say, well, but it's practically the same. It's like naishkarmya. If you're performing the duties because you should, the results for someone else is called naishkarmya. You perform the same duty, but the results are for yourself. That's called sakam. Right? So that's considered lower. That's fruitive. So the platform of pranamoy is basically fruitive. Right? Because economics, justice, morality, the whole idea is that you're trying to get benefit from it, right, for yourself. Well, or you could be for others, but still you're looking at simply the benefit rather than the religious principles and the actual inherent nature of something. Does that make sense? Right? You can tell the difference? No. You understand the difference between doing it on the platform that it's the religious duty because it's the inherent nature? Because, in other words, you're supposed to deal with things according to their inherent nature, right? That you're supposed to do. Dealing with it according to your inherent nature, that's called religious, right? Because your purpose of dealing with it according to its nature is that's your duty to deal with it according to its nature. Right, because it's God's laws. So following God's laws, therefore you're performing your duty towards it. In other words, you're acting in your capacity of your relationship with it. right? The other is wanting to get profit, you know that you have to deal with it according to its nature. You understand? In other words, the one is, I want to perform my religious duty. Therefore, I deal with something according to its nature. Therefore, the religious duty is the relationship. The other is, I want profit. To get profit, I have to deal with it according to its nature. So it looks the same. That's why in the political field, if they use very sweet words, very carefully chosen, it really sounds like the politically correct person is acting for everyone's benefit and is actually, it's a very good thing. Yes, it's better than their own gross, self-centered sense gratification, but it's not nowhere near as good as, how you say, religious principles. Because their motive is totally different, right? And it's the motive. You perform a sacrifice, and your motive is your own benefit, you go to the heavenly planets. You change the motive that you perform the same sacrifice, you want freedom from the material energy, then that's your nice comment, you get liberation. You perform the same sacrifice to please Krishna, then it's devotion, you go back to Godhead. You understand? So it's very, very important. Just the externals aren't enough. Does that make sense? So by putting it on externals only, then we miss the point of what was the mood behind it. Right? That way then, the person who is materialistic or is political, then can cover that position, that lower position, by emphasizing the form that they're using to get their purposes. Does that make sense now? Yeah? You can see the difference? It's very, very important to be able to tell. This is how you can tell the difference between a Kshatriya and a Vaishya. Vaishyas love to be very religious, right? They're generally the ones that fall prey to what we call Dharma Dvaji, right? The flag of Dharma they always are waving. Oh, yes, how could they do that? It is so this. Oh, you know, like this. And and then they're so religious, you know. Oh yes, we gave in charity here. We did this. We did that. Isn't that so wonderful? Like that. Kshatriyas don't do that. Did you ever hear Arjuna boasting about what he did? Right. When he saved Maya Dhanava, and Maya Dhanava said, "I want to do something for you because you saved me." What was Arjuna's point?
It was his duty.
Yeah, it was his duty. I didn't do it for a profit. Therefore, if you give me a profit, it's like business, and I'm not a businessman. You understand? So therefore, for profit, and getting profit, receiving charity is not the Kshatriya's point. Though they take tax, they have lots of revenue, right? It means the kings are richer than anybody. But their wealth is to protect the kingdom. They have to maintain the armies. They have to maintain the whole, administrative structure, right? Like that. And then that makes everything work for their people. Yeah? Does that make sense? Very important to be able to tell the difference between a Kshatriya and a Vaishya. Because they're very close, and the Vaishyas will always try to present themselves as something else, right? Like nowadays, devotees, when they talk about management, what are the books, you know, if they use outside books, what books are they using? Right? These self-help books in management.
Does he have the power? How do you use warfare
tactics? No, very few are using that. Very few use power, Machiavelli, Sun Tzu. Very few use that. Most of what they're using is books on that are meant for businessmen. Yeah, how to get rich, you know, poor dad, rich dad, you know, ugly dad, really good looking dad, you know, all these different books like that, you know. So those are all books for Vaishyas. The inherent principles of management, they go throughout, whether you're a Brahmin, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra, are the same. But the whole point of it is why they're inspiring you to do it is not because it's your religious duty that's what you should do. But look at the profit you'll get from it. You understand? You know what I'm saying? Because their examples are always related to business. Always. They're not related to how to run a country. They're never related to how to run a country. You understand? So therefore, then they're presenting themselves as big managers and administrators. But no, that's Vaishya. The principles are the same, but they're not seeing that. So they don't get the credit for it. You know what I'm saying? You know it's bhakti, you get the credit of bhakti. You perform devotional activities, don't know they're devotional activities, you don't get the credit of devotional activity. Your motive is everything. Right? It's called Ajnata Sukriti. The person comes down the street, sees a Rath Yatra, goes by, kind of has a smile. Okay, you know, got all these people out there in their bed sheets dancing around. Hare Krishna. Yeah, Hare Krishna. Like that. But you didn't know it's devotional service. You get Bhakti Sukriti, but it's not bhakti yet. It's a Sukriti that can be translated into devotion. But it's not devotion yet. Devotion is, as you know, this is God, this is myself, this is the process to worship Him. Then you get to Bhakti Sukriti. And the more that you understand that, realize that, the more benefit you're getting.
That can be considered as a seed,
a Bhakti Bij? No, it's not exactly seed, because it's a field, it's pious activity. But it's piety because you have Sukriti that can end in Bhakti, or in karma jnana. You understand? I mean, it's a sign. It's not sentiment. That's the thing. Oh no, but you know, he meant no. He didn't mean well. He didn't mean his devotional service. So that's the whole thing. Because it's what you mean is what it takes you. Right? Buses go everywhere, but you, depending on what bus you get on, it takes you to a certain place. But the method that they take you there is exactly the same. So there's only one path, it's Krishna's path. There isn't many paths. Right? Someone says, oh, but there's so many paths. It's the Sankirtan dog? At the Sankirtan dog? Yeah? No. Okay. It's only one path, there's not many paths. So this one path, it's just a matter of which way you're, which direction you're going on it, and how far you're going. Right? Because, as we mentioned before, is everything that you're doing in this world, if it works, you're following Krishna's method. You know that, you get the credit for knowing it. You don't know it, you don't get the credit for knowing it. Does that make sense? Right? Let us say, there's a horse. You deal with the horse properly, right? Because you've learned from people who have worked with horses, and that they, by hit and miss, have figured out what works with a horse and what gets you kicked over, right? So, therefore, then you could say, see, they're getting success. But the point is there is a shastra and there is other indications that tell you how you're supposed to deal with horses. Because it's God's law, how horses work. So you take care of a horse because that's the way Shastra says you're supposed to take care of a horse, right? Then you get that. Then you get pious benefit, right? Otherwise, before it was simply an art that you followed, and you got the material benefit now. But you do it according to Shastra because that's what you're supposed to do. Then that will get you to the heavenly planets, right? You do it because this is just a way of following the Shastra, and you're supposed to follow, you know, means that's your platform of piety, but your whole point is simply to get out of the material world, that if you take care of that horse, not for your own purpose, it will get you out. Right? Because you're following the Shastra without a desire for fruit of result. That's Naishkarma. It will liberate you. You're following the Shastra with a desire for the result, you'll get a result now, and you'll get one in the future of going to the heavenly planets. You don't follow Shastra, you'll only get the benefit now if you're following God's eternal laws on the subject. And if you don't follow God's eternal laws on the subject, you won't get anything. Otherwise known as bhupgas. Right? Does that make sense? Right? Now, if you follow that shastra without desire for the result to please Krishna, because this is Krishna's creation, this is how he wants horses to be dealt with. So his horse potency is there in this particular animal. So therefore, dealing with that potency the way Krishna wants it to be dealt with, then it will take, you'll get the benefit of the horse, taking care of the horse now, you'll get liberated from the material energy, and you will get devotional, bring you closer to Krishna. Right? So now you get three benefits out of it. You get the material, the immediate material, you get the future liberation, and you get devotion. Right? The path of jnana will get you the present benefit, and the future of liberation. The pious person will get the immediate result and going to the heavenly planets. Right? The completely mundaner, if they're just somehow or another, by chance or by observation or following God's laws, they'll get the immediate result only. And someone who speculates and makes up his own thing without being able to work it by pratyaksha, by observation, gets nothing. You know, it sounds good. They all sit around and they use very flowery words. It sounds great. But if you notice, they don't get any result. They talk about social harmony. They talk about this. They talk about that. There is no result. Nothing. So therefore, you can understand they're not following God's laws. Does that make sense? So the main point is are you following God's laws? The second point is then, are you following... No, actually, let's start the other way. The first point is are you connecting what you're doing to Krishna as devotees, right? The second thing is are you using the shastra to deal with the material energy that you're connecting to Krishna, right? Does that make sense? So you can tell the difference between these? So all of the difference is consciousness. And whether we're pious enough to accept God's laws. Does that make sense? And especially God's laws given to us by the scriptures, Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. Right? Did that make sense? Yes.
As much as we should try to cultivate ingenuity.
Ingenuity.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So does it mean that we have to at all times try to see Krishna behind everything, all things that we have to deal with here in the day? Then that ingenuity means that we have to try to understand the connection between those things and Krishna, and how Krishna bodies are working.
Okay.
So what is it?
Okay, so we mentioned before that we have the ingenuity, because that was what Krishna said what impressed him about Brahma. Because he used his ingenuity for Krishna. So that's what pleased Krishna. Right? So that was why that's called sincerity. Right? And someone who's sincere gets Krishna's blessing. So here, ingenuity, then, is that in trying to see, it means, how is that working? So ingenuity here would mean a few things. Right? But any one of them is ingenuity, but the more of them you can put together, the better. One is that we're trying to do service for Krishna. So therefore, we're trying to see what's the best way to do the service, right? We know the shastra, we've heard from authority that service should be done, or we know that according to authority that the service will work in a particular way, right? Means this particular material energy works in this way according to God's laws. I'm trying to follow that. Okay? So then ingenuity would be taking those laws and applying it to time, place, and circumstance. In other words, I know the shastra, the shabda. I've heard from authority. Now I try to make that instruction of authority practical, that I can see it working. Right? In other words, Vedic is not complete until time, place, and circumstance are fulfilled. Right? This is a very popular theme of those who are not so convinced about the Vedic method. Is they'll always say, oh, it's just rules, it's not practical. No, it's not fully Vedic till it becomes practical. So that's why I always make the strong point that if people say we tried Varnashram and it didn't work, I say they didn't really try Varnashram. Because Varnashram always works. God's laws always work. So if you didn't get the result, that's your fault, not Varnashram's fault. You didn't know how to apply it to time, place, and circumstance. Therefore, the failure was yours, not the scriptures, not guru, not sadhu. Right? In other words, you have the science, but then there's the art of application. Right? So that's where you failed. Right? So then there's the ingenuity in applying the law that it practically gets the result. And why get the result? We could say, oh, it doesn't matter, it's only the mood and all that. Yes, that's okay if you're, you know, standing up for the first time and just trying to walk, or, you know, baby says his first words, you know, food, you know, or something, you know, like that. So, you know, does that make sense? That's okay then. But they don't know more. But when you're dealing with a sentient adult, especially that's 50 years old and been in the movement for 30 years, then we can't use that. That's not enough. You know what I'm saying? So you have to see is how to follow the rules given by Krishna and the Acharyas in my life right now. So that's an ingenuity. That's sincerity. That they said it, it must be right. So I'm trying to get it done. Rather than, they said it, but, you know, they're not here and they don't really know me in the time, place, and circumstance because I'm special and unique in the creation, right? God's created dogs. He can say what a dog's like, but I, as a dog, think, no, I'm special. I don't act like a dog. I'm a different kind of dog. Right? You know what I'm saying? So that is supreme false ego to think that just because you're a Westerner, therefore, you know, you're special and different. No, they're one of the, they're tribals like the Shastras mention, and they respond like tribals. You know exactly what the Westerner will do in any given situation, because they're tribals, it's easy to see. They act exactly according to the Shastra. And to think that you're special just because, you know, you got, you know, pleats in your pants or something like that, you know, then that's really proud. To think that you are outside God's laws. So even if you take, okay, let us take the Western mentality and let's just give it some credence just for the discussion. And then according to Western thought, what is the position that you are so special that you act outside of God's laws and don't follow God's laws? And that's okay for you. You actually have a position. Who?
Satan.
Yeah, it's called the devil. Right? It's called a resident of hell. Right? Isn't that what it says? Like that. You know, if you don't respect the Brahmins, Mahaprasad, you know, Mahaprasad, Govinda, the name, all these things, you are possessed of a hellish mentality. So even if we want to take the Western, yes, you're special, but that's called Satan. It's not called anything else. So even that's got a box to put in. Is that okay? Then the other aspect, then, so that's one aspect, getting the result done, because the result's for Krishna. Right? It may be for yourself, then you give the result to Krishna. Okay, that works. But you do it because it will be given to Krishna. That's even better. Right? So you want a good result. So you're using ingenuity, how to get this done nicely for Krishna. Right? Prabhupada said naivety is not an excuse. Oh, I didn't know. Right? That's for others to give you an excuse. You can't use it as your own, for your own as an excuse. I can't say, oh, I didn't know. No, that's what others should say. Oh, he didn't know, so therefore we'll give. No, I should say, I should have found out. Right? Does that make sense? So, therefore, the excellence of how well you perform the activity using your intelligence, that is then that sincerity, because you've made that a proper endeavor. Then the next would be is how Krishna's energies are working. How is it the religious principle? What is the nature of it? So, therefore, what is the science behind it that it's working? In other words, the one was the art of application. Now it's the higher than that's the science. How does it work? What is the connection between this material activity and the spiritual? How does it connect to Krishna? All right, so that would be the next ingenuity, how to see it like that. And then the final and most important ingenuity is how to see Krishna himself in it. That you're doing it for Krishna, the mood towards Krishna, that you're doing it out of devotion and affection for Krishna. So that's the most important of the three. Right? The first one gets you your result for Krishna. The second one gets you out of the material world. The third one gets you into the material world and in your place in your service to Krishna. Does that make sense? Okay. So you see is that all these go on simultaneously. That's the problem. Modern man is so advanced, he can't look at many things at once and see them working all at once because he's not developing the finer brain tissues. The finer brain tissues allow you to see all these contradictory things at once. Right? And that comes from chanting, you know, from drinking milk, and from, you know, living in very nice, beautiful places. Right? Does that make sense? So that's why we do all three. You understand? Never think we're making all these gardens because you guys sitting here, we made them so you can run through them and rip the leaves off of everything and, you know, step on the plants and everything like that. That wasn't the reason we made it. We didn't make it because, you know, for you to not appreciate it, right? It was made because despite your not appreciating it, it will have the effect of refining your brain, whether you know it or not. Right? Does that make sense? You know, three bricks up, they understand that. But three bricks down, then not so much. Does that make sense? Yeah? Like that. So that's why it's there. Some people think we're crazy, why we're making all these gardens for a bunch of madmen who don't even notice they exist. But that's the purpose. Right? You chant Hare Krishna, you drink, you know, plenty of milk, and you live in nice places, it refines the brain. And this refined brain then is able to understand the subtleties of Krishna consciousness. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah?
So, also, if we start seeing this in connection with Krishna, it becomes devotion?
If you see it in connection to Krishna, does it become devotion? Basically, yeah. Then it becomes real. Then it's a matter of, are you doing it to please Krishna or not? You can see it in relationship to Krishna, but your purpose is liberation or sense gratification. You know what I'm saying? I could see it in relation to Krishna. It's by Krishna's grace only that my business will go well. So you've seen it in relation to Krishna. That makes it real. So that then becomes, you know, actual proper pious. But your goal is not Krishna. It's profit. You understand? But it's good because you've gone to Krishna. You've actually understood who is running everything. Right? Does that make sense? It's better than just thinking, oh, but just by my expertise, I'll make the business go well. Right? You know that the principles of economics come from Krishna. Therefore, you're trying to follow them well because that will please Krishna and you'll get the profit. So if you're doing, because it's Krishna's laws on, I have an interest in business, therefore I follow God's laws on economics to please him. So therefore I will engage my nature in his service. That will then get you out of the material world into the spiritual world. If you only do it because this is, I, you know, have an economic nature, therefore I'm following this because it's God's laws, that will get you liberated. Right? If I do it without the desire for the result. If I do it with the desire for the result, then that will, you know, gets us, you know, the nice facility here. If I do it because it'll please Krishna, then I get the devotion. Or if I do it to please Krishna with either of those other two motives, then it's mixed. But at least it has the devotional part in it. It's connected to Krishna, it's connected to Shastra. So benefit will be there. And with time, one will see that the material benefit isn't as important as freeing yourself from the material energy, which isn't as important as developing love for God. You'll start to see with time the difference between them. Does that make sense? So that way, anybody in any position can free themselves from them, get the benefits that they want, free themselves from the material energy, and go back to Godhead if they perform their activities in knowledge without attachment. You know, right? That's what Krishna is saying in Gita. Perform your duties with knowledge, without attachment, thinking of Krishna for Krishna's pleasure. You do that, you get what you want, you get out of the material nature, you go back to Godhead. You get all three. Right? Does that make sense? So, for someone on the platform of karma and jnana, then that's very inspiring. Someone on the platform of devotion, it's just, now you can serve Krishna in, you know, all these different aspects. Right? They're not rejected, because austerity, charity, and sacrifice are not rejected by anyone in the Vedic culture. Therefore, then, austerity, you're performing your duties, you'll get your benefits now and in the future. That you're doing it as sacrifice, then that means then the aspect of elevation is there. Right? So, depending upon what it is, then you'll either go to the heavenly planets or go to the Brahman. Right? Or, you're doing it to sacrifice for Krishna, you go to Krishna. Right? Does that make sense? So it's just on your sacrifice, yes.
Maharaj, when Lord Chaitanya was here on Earth, when he left, then everyone else that was here went back to the spiritual world, because he was so merciful. But they didn't do anything. They didn't perform any austerities, they didn't try to welcome anything, but they still went back to Godhead.
Does it say Godhead or liberation? Since everyone was liberated. So depending upon what it is, liberation either means you know God, that means going to the spiritual world. Right? Otherwise, liberation can mean just going to the Brahman. You're situated on that platform. Does that make sense? But the point is everybody gets a clean slate. Like that. Because someone who is liberated, it's very easy for them to appreciate Krishna consciousness. Right? So either one. You know. So you're wondering if Columbus, you know, went back to Godhead. Right? You know. I mean, 1492, that's when the Goswamis and Lord Chaitanya were there. Isabella also, right? You had something there, or something was back there? Radhika had something? No. Okay, does that make sense? The ingenuity and all that? Right? So in other words, it has all these levels. That's, Krishna is so kind that whatever his instructions, you have all these levels you can apply them at. And whatever works for you, it'll do. It's all part of the same path. In other words, the path has activities on it. The path has knowledge on it. The path has devotion on it. So the activity performed with knowledge, that is the activity and its foundation in Sambandha. But it's being done to please somebody, then that gives its foundation in Prayojana. That's complete. Then Sambandha, Abhideya, Prayojana are all being represented, because Vasudev means all the qualities of Sankarshan, Prajumna, and Aniruddha are present in the activity. So you have knowledge, you have interest in the activity, and you have an interest to benefit someone else. So therefore it's complete. Right? So that is then the proper manifestation of rasa. If you're only manifesting one of them, it won't be as complete. Right? Vasudeva is considered the complete form. Sankarshan is his expansion, from that is Prajumna, from that's Aniruddha. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Are those amongst the... Okay. Are all the principal chieftains of thy empire all devoted to thee? Right, because you have all these different groups of persons, right? All your different villages or different areas, you know, different small, different communities, either by social or by economic, you know, or by the different varnas, right? There's so many ways that you could make groups, So are all those heads of those groups, are they devoted to you? In other words, you have to be able to relate to everybody. Not, I'm in charge, therefore they just have to follow me. No, you're in charge, you have to make sure that they are following you by cultivating, by, because they're devoted. Not, you didn't say, are all the chieftains, principal chieftains of the empire, all fearful of thee and therefore, you know, follow your laws. No, he didn't say that. Are they devoted? So that means you deal with them such a way that they are coming to you. Right? Someone comes to you because of they like to work with you. You know, if it's only because of the rule, then if they can find a reason in the rule not to come, or another rule, they won't. Does that make sense? So it's not enough that, okay, now I'm in the seat now, therefore now everyone's got to do what I want, and I just sit here in my seat, and that makes me lazy intelligent. No, it's called lazy. Intelligent means that you're actually performing the religious principles of an administrator. Right? If you're not just demanding them, that's called lazy. That's called unintelligent. That's called uncultured. That's called unqualified. Right? Does that make sense? Okay. Are they ready to lay down their lives for thy sake, commanded by thee? Right? In other words, they feel so indebted because of how well you protect them, they're willing to follow the same ideals as you. Right? Your values have become their values. That means you've educated them in it, you've created the environment in which they can practice it, and you're seeing that practice is going on. Right? Then they'll be devoted, yes. Lazy and lazy intelligent. Lazy would be, a couple of them. Well, let's say lazy intelligent. Lazy intelligent would be that you have made a plan, you've understand all the elements that need to be done in the plan, what kind of persons are required to do it, you can identify who should do it, you explain to them and inspire them to do it, and then you follow up to see if they have done it, and also to nourish their further, you know, going. You know, in other words, if it's a relationship, it's constant. You're always putting something in, right? So that's the thing. So that means it's active, because you're always doing something. But you're getting others to do it. Lazy means you think that I've already told them, now it'll go on eternally without any more of my input. Right? Or that wouldn't necessarily be, let's say, lazy, that would just be uninformed. They just don't actually know how management works. Right? Because management is an ongoing moment-to-moment thing. Right? You're dealing with the future, but you're dealing with it now. Right? What I want in the future, what's its connection to now? Right? Because after prayojana, after feeling, comes willing. So, in other words, your activity now has to be connected with your plan in the future, right? Then it's your plan is alive, you know. And what you're doing now, if there's no future to it, then it's not intelligent. It'll just be sentiment. It'll just be experience only. You'll get nothing other than the experience.
So, proper management would be considered intelligent.
No, because you could yourself do things and go around and run around and make sure it's all going on and this and that. The other is that you can sit there and you can inspire them to deal and with you and all that. But just to demand, if you just demand, because I'm in the seat, therefore they have to come and all that, that's lazy. That's just, you have a position, what are you doing that make, why should people come to you? Just because you're in the seat, so what? You know? That's a nice thing for you to say, but reality is people are people and they are busy. They're already doing something. They're not just sitting in their chair and demanding that you got to come to them. They're already busy. So if they're busy doing their stuff, how are they going to get time to come to you? Because the time that they come to you and then wait and then you're not there and then you're on the phone because you're always so important and so busy. And therefore, anyone who actually is a manager doesn't want to come around because they can't stand wasting the time. And they can understand that you don't have either the ability or the interest in their area. So therefore, why should they waste their time? Rather, they just get their work done, you know, to please, you know, Guru Krishna and the sadhus. You know what I'm saying? Like that. So there is the arrogant, lazy, you know, so-called lazy intelligent, who's actually just lazy. But they're arrogant, so that ruins the intelligent part. Then there's the other one, they're very intelligent, but they don't actually know how to connect theory to practical. So that means they're actually not a manager. Nice guys, but not managers. Then the other ones is that they're able to manage it. They know the theory, they know that they can practice it. But they themselves get more involved and get it done. When they're doing it, it works. That's active intelligent. When they are able to inspire others that they can just sit there and it still goes on, that's lazy intelligent, right? In other words, if you get involved, then it always gets done, but if you don't get involved, it doesn't get done, that's active intelligent, right?
So in our situations, we should start with active intelligence and then inspire everyone, and then it can become lazy intelligent.
Yeah, then it can become lazy intelligent. But even if one has established lazy intelligence, one always has to know that nothing in material energy lasts. So there will be times as the reason, in other words, the person who could do active intelligence, right, will do it if needed. You know, it's just like the business person. If it has to be, he has to buy the things, he has to sell the things, he has to clean the shop, you know, he has to make the contacts, he will do it. And then as, you know, it develops, then he'll get people to do all those things, and then he'll just sit over in the corner with his, you know, chewing palm, right? Like that. Does that make sense? You know, like that. You go into the big office, there's, you know, huge air-conditioned office, huge desk, 20 phones, the guy sitting there in his, you know, suit and tie and all that. That may or may not be the businessman, you know? Clint always tell me, he went into such an office and all that, and was going, the whole thing about, you know, doing some service for the temple and donation. And then the guy said, I'll have to ask the boss. And he said, oh, really? This guy's not the boss. So he calls on the phone, and then he says, okay, the boss wants to meet you. There was this little door in the side of this big air-conditioned office. They went out it. It went out on a little 3 foot by, you know, 10 foot wide little veranda out in the middle of, you know, Calcutta, you know. No air conditioning. I mean, a veranda. I'm not, you know, just a veranda. And out there is sitting a guy in a dhoti in a t-shirt, you know, chewing pond with one of those little electric fans there, like that. That was the boss. So he's just sitting there chewing pond, and he's got some fancy guy, you know, from a business school, you know, with a degree, you know, in the suit there that is doing his work. That's lazy intelligent. Okay. Both are good, but lazy intelligence means if you can do that, you can accomplish more if the situation is such that you have the qualified people that you can train to do that. But in any case, a lazy intelligent manager can be active intelligent, because if he's not, then he can't get others to, he won't be able to create. You know what I'm saying? In other words, he's lazy intelligence because others are active intelligent. Right? So unless you can be active intelligent, how can you train others to be active intelligent, right? Then if you are actually lazy intelligent, then you can train them to be that also. Therefore, then your top managers may also be practicing lazy intelligence, and they're getting so much done, right? Because they have all their people and they're watching. In other words, 10 people are there, they're able to keep track of them and get it all done. Either that or they have to run around to all 10 of them, they get it done. Or they can sit there and it still goes on. Does that make sense? Yeah.
Why do we call it lazy when it's got a negative connotation?
Why does lazy have a negative connotation?
Why do we call lazy intelligence when it's something?
Oh, why does lazy intelligence? It just makes it very easy. You know, you got four boxes, you know, famous four boxes, you know, like that. Lazy, you know, I say. Lazy, foolish, lazy, intelligent. You know, active, foolish, active, intelligent. You know, you always have the two qualities and then you match them. So you have lazy and intelligent. So you can have lazy, right? You know? Does that make sense? So, or intelligent, right? You know, but so then the difference is just where it falls, what it does. So depending upon what you're dealing with, then you are emphasizing a particular category.
Okay. Mark, I have understood that one may have a shakti for management, even though one is not managed by his nature. So, can you explain more, or can one who is not managed by nature still manage for a long time?
Someone who's not a manager by nature, can he manage a long time? One, you have to follow the principles of management, because the principles of management work. Someone who's not a manager doesn't like to deal with the principles of management, basically. Well, the principles aren't the problem, it's the detail, it's the application. So, therefore, by dealing with the principles, then it'll work. It's just a matter of dealing with the art, like that. If one can inspire oneself, it's being done for Krishna, it pleases Guru Krishna and the Vaishnavas, then one can inspire oneself to do more. Otherwise, one can then, you know, work in such a way you get someone else to do it. You know, in other words, find the other person who can do it, and therefore you just spiritually guide them and all that. And there, because they are managers, they will do their job. Because as we see in the Vedic system, the administrator is below the person who is cultivating one's spiritual values. You know what I'm saying? Generally in India, the temples, the preachers are senior to the administrators. Right? Like that. It's a Western system where the administrators are senior to the Brahminical. You know what I'm saying? Like a hospital, you have a manager and he manages all the doctors, but the doctors technically are senior to him because he can only manage. He can't do anything with the medicine. So the doctors are the senior. But, you know, in other words, Brahmins need Kshatriyas, Kshatriyas need Brahmins. But still, the relationship is the Brahmins, the senior. Right? So he's the senior spiritually. He wants to be senior also materially, means he has to know the field that the Kshatriyas do and be able to advise them, like we see Narad Muni here, on how to properly perform the duty and how to connect the spiritual to their duties. Right? So inspiring in that, therefore they're seen. So it's not just it's demanded, you actually can perform. Right? So a Brahmin who is not a manager, doesn't understand the management field, shouldn't be giving advice to administrators on management because he doesn't know the field. It won't be practical. That's what we're saying. Then they say we tried the Vedic, it didn't work because it's not practical. Those who know administration and management, those are the ones that should be involved in management. And of those, you should at least have one that understands the spiritual connection. If everybody does, better. But just because someone's senior or someone's older, has age ever been a requirement for management, administration? Does that make sense? So that's the point, is that it's not age is an important element, but it has nothing to do with management. Someone who's older, an older manager and a younger manager, if they're basically equally qualified, the older manager will have more experience and more understanding. But if the younger administrator is more qualified, then even in his short years he may understand more than the less qualified manager who's been doing something for years and years and years. Right? So there's nature and then there's ability. You know? You have two musicians, right? One person, he's a musician and he can sit there all day and play the drone. You'd have to be a musician to do that. But that's all of his capability and capacity in music is to play the drum. While someone else can, you know, be the lead singer or instrumentalist and like that. So ability, they're much more qualified. But in nature, they're both musicians. Does that make sense? So one has to be able to see that. So if that distinction's not made, then you have a lot of people who are unqualified, only due to security questions, are involved in the management because they're insecure and don't trust anyone. But that is never, never in any book anywhere, Vedic or non-Vedic, mentioned as a qualification to be involved in management. It's no qualification at all, just because you want to. So what? Prabhupada says, first deserve, then desire. Right? You deserve to manage, then desire to manage. You know, in other words, without Sankarshan, you don't have Prajumna. You don't have the field, how can you be inspired in the field? So if you have no field of activity in management, right? In other words, you don't own any, you have no ownership in the field of management, how can you claim to want, how can you desire to manage? You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? Is that okay? Yeah? Okay.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhakti Vrinda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Premanandi.
How can we close down the question factory? How can we close down the question factory? Because it would be good to get through the end of the second canto by finishing it.
Oh, okay. I'll just give shorter answers.
Should we talk to him as well?
No, no, because then he becomes discouraged. He doesn't come like before. He stopped coming for a lot of time because he thought his questions were appreciated. Like that. No, no. We're almost at the end of the thing anyway. And then I think the next chapter will go quicker because it's not that. Okay, we'll just keep it in mind that we have to start moving through. Yeah, no, it's a good point because that way, then when we start up, then we can. Yeah. In other words, those who are up on it, let's continue. In other words, those who are up who are up to date, then in September, if they want, then they can continue with the third canto stuff and just read and study and just send you the essays and just continue like that. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, we'll start the Bhakti Shastri, so the classes will work according to the Bhakti Shastri.
Yeah.
Like that. Nice. Like that. But anybody who is keeping up can just continue. We don't want to stop that.
I've got four or five correspondent students. Paid up. Some of them are active, some of them are.
Okay. So what you'll do is just make it more clear.
Yeah, okay. Mm-hmm.